With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Mitch Trubisky said he would like to turn off the TVs at Halas Hall so he could stop hearing people rip his team and offer advice. Do you appreciate his honesty or wonder if he's beginning to crack under the pressure? Should a Bears quarterback be that sensitive?
Well, I think he's going to get a lot of attention today and the rest of this week. It sounds as if the Bears, you know, haven't been this upset about what's on daytime television since Cody Parkey went on the Today Show. But I think it will be tend to be overstated. It didn't bother me because it was in the context of a question he was asked about how do you tune out negativity? And the context was, what do you do about it? And Mitch, to some degree, isn't the most polished guy behind the podium. And we have seen examples of that this year, from the point where he turned to the PR person and asked him if he could answer a question to yesterday. There's a lot of the tentativeness and the lack of confidence you see in the pocket you often see at the podium. So, yeah, you would want ideally somebody who's a little bit more skilled up there. You'd like to see a little bit more eloquence at times, but that's not what he's going to be judged by. If he goes out on Sunday and he completes 22 of 34 for 3 TDs against the Lions again, and he's a guy that is the reason they win and get back on track and win their first game since September 29th, that will show that this is a, nothing to see here type of moment. And it probably is a nothing to see here type of moment. Unfortunately, when you're struggling to the extent that he is struggling, every little thing that he does, you want to attach to, a shortcoming on the field. And so, to me, this just is a guy who's can't get out of his own way right now. So I don't know that it's something to indication of cracking under pressure. He is sensitive. Pro athletes are sensitive. That's the one thing that you have to remember. It's not just the Bears quarterback. It's everybody. But I think that he can do as loud as talking Sunday against the Lions.
When I first met you, the quarterback of the Bears, I believe, was Rex Grossman.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
No one was more genuine, polished at the podium.
I loved Rex.
Tried to answer questions.
I was a Rex guy.
As honestly as possible. And that included after they had clinched everything you could possibly clinch in the regular season in 2006. Bears clinched home field advantage for the entire playoffs leading up to the Super Bowl. They did everything you could possibly do. And he joked around about how he wasn't going to take that final game seriously because he had some New Year's plans, right?
Yeah, the New Year's Eve stuff.
And this was by far and away that year the best team in the NFC. I mean, the Bears were so much fun to watch. They were doing everything you could possibly ask from a football team that season. And people shredded Rex Grossman. And in a performance-oriented industry, when the performance started to dip, no one cared about Rex being honest and transparent at the podium. It doesn't matter what a quarterback has to say. He got booed out of town, even though he was the nicest person you would ever meet and was must-watch television, must-listen-to radio when he was at the podium because he didn't have a filter. He just kind of told you exactly how he felt. So the only thing that I care when it comes to Mitchell Trubisky is not what he tells you at the podium. It's what he tells you by his play. That's the reason that everyone is ticked off about what he had to say at the end of yesterday's press conference. Is he sensitive? I think most people are. I think most people in the public eye today are sensitive because the way people are covered in the public eye is
very
different.
Why are you picking
on me? It's not just you. It's you can go from the White House on down. I think people have a very difficult time because of social media. People have access to you if you allow them to that they've never had before. See, in the old days, people would take a pen and they would take a paper and they would actually write if they were upset with you. You know, they'd have to write out a letter. And very few people did that because, you know, that involved work and thought, and you'd have to construct sentences. Well, you don't have to do that in a Twitter and Facebook world. And I think this generation, it impacts them more than, say, any group of athletes that we've had in professional sports ever.
Well, I was also a big Rex Grossman guy, David. I'm sure that you're not surprised by that.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
It's a Hoosier thing.
It's a Hoosier thing. You guys wouldn't get it. But as far as the relation to from Rex to Mitch Trubisky, because everybody now is comparing Mitch to all of the other, you know, parade of horrible quarterbacks that the Bears have had over their history, really. And Mitch is just the latest in the line. And I think he's getting more scrutiny because of, one, what the team did last year, the fact that he was the second pick in the draft, the fact that all of these expectations were put upon him. You know, he's got the offensive guru head coach. He's got all of these weapons. He's in the perfect spot. And he has laid the most enormous egg this season in so many ways, whether it's behind the podium, whether it's under center, in the shotgun, wherever you put him, he is pretty much underperformed. You know, hearing him say this yesterday, David, I really liked your analogy. You know, he was so good up until that last moment at the press conference. Why did he need to say this? There was no, he wasn't really like baited into this. Nobody really pulled it out of him or anything. I get that you don't want to be criticized. You don't want to, you know, have your teammates thrown under the bus. You want to look like you're a leader, like you're standing up for your guys. But he did come off as very sensitive yesterday. I've never met Mitch. I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but listen, you're an NFL quarterback. You're very highly paid. You were the number two pick in the draft. You were probably the best player on your team your entire life, and now you're facing adversity. I'm sure it's a real drag for him mentally to have to deal with this and all of the noise from radio and television and the internet. I'm sure it stinks, but you can't come out here and say this when your team's in last place. It's just going to let people pile on more and more than they already have done. I didn't really care for this yesterday.
I appreciate Mitch's honesty. I do. Nobody wants to hear negativity about themselves. Nobody wants to be ripped, especially on television and on radio and everything that, you know, everybody's talking about Mitch and how bad he's been playing. So I appreciate the honesty, but also I do think he has already cracked from the pressure because we have all season heard about, we're entering week 10. We've been hearing about horse blinders and earmuffs all damn season. I mean, and they're not putting them on. It's not happening.
They apparently are out of stock.
They're out of stock, or Mitch lost them somewhere because he's been trying to turn off these TVs at Hallis Hall. Hopefully they turn them off because that's the only way he's going to get through this. Unfortunately for Mitch, the negativity isn't going to stop until he improves in performing on the field. So I feel for him in that sense. Should a Bears quarterback be that sensitive? I'd like to see him not respond in this way so frequently and just say, hey, like kind of like Eddie Jackson states on this show, you know, I have to do better. I know I have to do better and I will. And Mitch has done that at times, but very often we've heard this from him. So I wish he wasn't so sensitive, but I do understand where he's coming from.
I get it. Where he's coming from, but he shouldn't let us know. He's definitely hearing it. He's feeling it. We talked about it yesterday, the idea that there's voices in his head, and Nagy addressed yesterday.
He was asked about it. Yeah.
Outside people that they can't control. I think there's a lot of that. There's a lot of people telling Mitch what's going on out there, and maybe they need to take a shot of you-know-what up. Okay? It's not helping. It wouldn't help anybody.
You mean people not necessarily on the Bears payroll. You mean
Correct.
People in his support system.
His little circle.
In his network.
His circle of trust.
How do you tell them not to talk to him, though? Come on.
Oh, no. You don't. Nagy said, we can't control that.
Right.
If they're listening, and I think they are, I'm suggesting they stop it because it's not helping.
They turned off the radio, too.
Better not.
You know, Dave, it's a good question.
A well-circulated social media rumor Wednesday suggested the Bears will move Cody Whitehair back to center, likely meaning James Daniels would go back to guard. That was the way the Bears lined up in 2018. What do you think if that happens on Sunday? A move that would say panic or production?
Kevin, was Cody Whitehair a Pro Bowl player last year? The answer is yes.
Technically, so was Mitch Trubisky. What's your point?
Cody Whitehair was a Pro Bowl center, and the Bears made the playoffs last year, did they not? And the offense performed at a much better clip than they have this year, right? I have no problem with making any changes to try and improve what's been one of the worst offenses that not just that we've seen this season, but that we've seen from the Bears this millennium. And you think about how many awful Bears offenses we've seen this millennium. I have no problem with making changes.
I don't know that it's panic or production necessarily, because you don't know if it's going to work yet. So I think it's optimistic to say it would be productive. It is pragmatic, and it is a response to what's going on here. Look, I said at the beginning of the week, you could justify, if you're Matt Nagy, getting in front of your football team and saying, okay, guys, we're changing quarterbacks because things aren't working. Our offense stinks. You could be just as valid in the idea that you need to change your offensive line because, as you know, Olin Krutz, our guy that we heard coming in, you know, he tweeted out that Mitch wasn't necessarily all to fault, just Mitch, with the first half production against the Eagles. 9 yards was not just the quarterback. The offensive line contributed to that greatly. You look at all the metrics. FootballOutsiders.com, for instance, has the Bears ranked, I think, 29th in terms of offensive line efficiency. That's not good, okay? That's the opposite of not good. That stinks for an offensive line that was very good last year. If you want to change Cody Whitehair and James Daniels, who has not been... he's not taking advantage of the opportunity at center, and he needs to be better. And I think everybody understands that. I'm okay with this. Actually, I'm more than okay with this, because if you're not going to change quarterbacks, you have to change something, because you can't embrace the status quo and expect anything to be different on Sunday. So I think this is going to happen. You talk to some people around the team, and you get a sense that it's more than maybe just something that they're going to try. You've got to respond, and this is a good response.
Yeah, I think it's a panic move, but I think it's something you have to try to at least attempt, even if it looks like you're just kind of throwing stuff at the wall here and see what sticks. I mean, this is the worst offense in the NFL right here, and it's not just the quarterback. It's not just some of the receivers dropping passes. It's the offensive line. They've been underperforming all season long as well. It's been a collective effort to make this thing look so bad. And I usually would not advocate a major change like this in midseason, but at this point, I don't see what the harm could be. Why not try it? Why not see if it works for you? Because what you've been attempting so far this season has not worked whatsoever. And Cody Whitehair, Zach, to your point, has had success in the past. Obviously, James Daniels is a much younger player, but he's a guy I think we all agreed at one time had potential to be a good offensive lineman. So if you want to put these guys in the best position to succeed, where Matt Nagy has kind of fallen short at times this season with some of his play calling, some of his personnel decisions, this might be one where it does look like a panic move, but it could pay off. Why not give it a shot?
Well, I would say that the Bears offense is in a state of panic right now, and something needs to be done. It's terrible, the what they're putting on the field on the offensive side of the ball all around, basically, right now. It's just the Bears are not playing well. But yeah, it's a state of panic that the Bears offense is in, and I think this is a sensible move. You have to change something. You can't keep doing the same thing. This offensive line has been an issue. Cody Whitehair had success at center. This is a smart move while you are in a state of panic, and hopefully it pans out and leads to production.
I have ideas on what to do with the offensive line. This is not one of them.
What is it?
From a putting a foot in somebody's backside.
Whose?
I would do something with the offensive tackles.
Okay.
And I would see what's going on. Now, again, I'm not there. I don't have the opportunity to view what's going on. But if Alex Barrs is on the roster, I know he hasn't been eligible to play. He hasn't been active yet. I would let him play a game. Go ahead.
You're making this now, like 15 at 5. But I feel
that's
like...
That's every day, Zach.
I do want to hit on your point, because if you're going to complain about the tackles, you want to know how to fix it? How about designing rollouts for your quarterback who is very athletic, who has used his legs to get to a position where he became an NFL player, and allow him to exhibit the things that wowed you when he was in college? And if he fails doing that, or he gets hurt doing that, then that's the risk. Because what we've seen right now, where you're trying to force Trubisky to be a prototypical pocket passer, this is what you have. And Kevin, even though it feels like the Bears have the worst offense in football, it can get worse. Miami, Washington, and the Jets are worse than the Bears offensively in terms of the rankings. But
Zach has seen worse from the Bears.
Right, and you've seen worse. All of us have seen worse offenses this millennium. Forget about history. Just this millennium from the Bears. But I do think that you can utilize the quarterback's strengths better. And that's a way where the offensive line will look better as well.
The floor is back to Mr. Rhodes.
I'm good. It's long-winded. I'm good.
I like that idea. Alex Barnes has got, you got to see what you have, though. That's a good, that's,
I mean,
a good suggestion.
That's just Notre Dame Golden Domer bias right there.
Oh, no.
Because I'm not happy with the Notre Dame offensive line coach that's moved to the NFL right now.
Oh, I thought he was the greatest offensive line coach in the world.
Well, point being, the tackles have been every bit as disappointing as the interior offensive lineman for the Bears. It's all been a mess.
So often we expect that we just throw up these questions and they can be formed anyway or asked anyway, and we just expect responses.
Was Thomas Satoransky's great all-around game the best thing about the Bulls' victory over the Hawks, or was it Jim Boylan actually calling timeouts at the right time, or was it Zach LaVine's 360 dunk, or if not any of those things, what was it?
Ha, what an unusual choice, because there was so much to like about a Bulls game. I think it was actually... I got a chuckle out of seeing Jim Boylan call timeouts when the Hawks kind of stage mini runs. I thought this is a guy who's whatever you want to say about him the night before, and there was a lot to say about the night before. It seemed like he was responding. Maybe somebody got into his ear. Maybe he didn't turn off the television or the radio, and he heard all the criticism being leveled toward him. I did like Sato. Sato is where we're going with Zach. It's Sato having a big night, all-around game, 27 points, 7 assists, 8 boards. This is what you thought you were getting. He needs to be more aggressive offensively. I like the fact that Lauri Markkanen was more engaged. To me, that was the biggest development of the night, because that's the thing you have to be able to count on. Lauri Markkanen being aggressive from the jump, and he was, and that's what needs to be the consistent theme about this Bulls offense.
See, so to me, the answer to the question is Markkanen, because for the first time since the season opener, the guy looked like the kind of player you thought you were going to see this entire season. And to me, it's no surprise when he plays well, the team plays well, and they were able to get a victory. Although I will say it was impressive to watch the Czech D. Rose, Sato.
Jeez. Okay. A lot to like from last night's Bulls game. And of course, there's always going to be a negative contingent even after a victory. I saw people yesterday on Twitter say, oh, it's just the Hawks. Big deal. It's just the Bulls. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, a hugely competitive team here. These are the teams that you have to beat. And the Bulls should have already accrued many more victories this season, you know, given that they lost to some bad teams along the line, like Cleveland, like Charlotte. I mean, the Bulls should be much better than 3-6 right now. So even if they beat a not-so-great Atlanta Hawks team, one, it's a road win, which is always good. And two, these are the games that they are expected to have won. Sato was very good last night. You like to see him bust out a little bit after he got out to a slow start. You guys mentioned Markkanen. He needs to be more aggressive. I think it was KC on this show this week that said Markkanen is lacking that sort of, you know, ruthless instinct, and maybe more plays need to be drawn up particularly for him to get him more engaged and to get him going early in games. Is something I'd like to see. I mean, he only took 11 shots last night. I'd still like to see him be even more aggressive. I want to see Markkanen take more shots than pretty much anybody on this team, quite frankly. But a lot to like. The one thing, though, with Jim Boylan, I mean, some of the post-game stuff, like after every game, why does it sound like he's just been like through like the most like exhausting, rigorous like triathlon? He's always breathing really heavy.
He gives it all, man.
He's like emotional. He's struggling to put his words together.
What was your time in the 5K, Jim?
Yeah,
I mean, like, really?
Well, he doesn't sit down. He stands and he's pacing the entire game. This guy's intense on the sideline there. Yeah, he took some timeouts when you'd expect him to, so give him credit for that. But I will say that you guys already pointed out Markkanen. I think that was the highlight of the night, the aggressiveness that he showed. But to go with a different thing then here, I'll say, wow, Bulls, good for you. You maintained a lead through four quarters, and you didn't blow it in the fourth quarter. You closed out a game. This could be the start of something here for the Bulls. Play four quarters hard, and they took advantage of a struggling team. If you bring that kind of intensity every night, some good things are going to start to happen.
Oh, it was definitely the idea that Jim Boylan actually knew when to call a timeout last night for me. That was it. But I don't want to hear that it was the Hawks or it was every game matters. Okay, I don't care who you play. You got to beat the team that's in front of you. I was actually shocked. I mean, Otto Porter Jr. didn't need a night off.
I thought he was taking the night off.
But then apparently maybe he should have taken the night off if this is going to be a lingering
injury.
That's
why his load needs to be managed.
Yeah, do you feel a little bad about that now? He played as you kind of goaded him into playing, and now he
yes,
got
I did.
Hurt.
I don't quite get the question.
The Cubs announced plans to reduce the price of season tickets by 2.5%. Is this a PR move or a sincere gesture that recognizes the regression of the past two seasons?
It's neither. It's just a smart business decision based on the performance of the team on the field.
Well, I don't think that there was no concern about the PR implications about this, Zach. I mean, come on. I think that they're savvy enough to understand what it says when you have a headline. Season ticket prices drop for 2020. That's a good headline. That's something that you want to see if you're a Cubs fan. Now, when you look at all the different tiers and all the different pricing, you know, models, and you could really confuse yourself, or if you really can't sleep, I think that you should probably look into and read that, because that'll put you to sleep. It's a lot of gobbledygook, right, in terms of trying to figure this out. Bottom line is they did decrease season ticket prices, 2.5%. Individual tickets, probably you could go up. That's not inconsistent with the way things are. Big picture-wise, if you want to spin it from a PR standpoint, it's a response to a bad season. And you're seeing that throughout the organization. You're seeing that throughout every layer, you know, in terms of the staff for David Ross. You got rid of your manager. Everything is being addressed, and I think this is just part of that.
Well, like you said, David, even though season tickets are going down, individual game tickets are going to be going up this season. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I would assume that most people that go to Cubs games are just buying individual tickets per game. So I think it's going to affect people in a bad way more than it is, you know, a 2.5 decrease on these rich people that already have season tickets to begin with. Attendance has actually been down 4.3%, which is not a ton, but it's gone down since they won the World Series in 2016. Obviously, this year was very frustrating. Last year, they made the playoffs, but they were one and done. So a couple years back-to-back where they have disappointed, and I think maybe that did have a part that was played in this. And also, the fact that they're going to ask people for even more money this season to, you know, sign up for this right-wing zealot TV network that they're throwing out there now. So they want more money here, so they're going to take away more money or take away less money in another department. It's really just moving deck chairs for me. I don't really think it's a big deal, a big story at all.
I'll say it's a little bit of both, a PR move. I mean, there's been some off-the-field headlines related to the Cubs that haven't been so pleasant, so this is a nice little headline for them. And sure, yeah, it recognizes that this has been a couple of down seasons for the Cubs a little bit. And hopefully it'll be a better one this coming season.
I think it makes sense. It's a savings to those that are invested for the entire block of games. But I also thought I heard that single game tickets, right, is going up. So it's an offset. I'm not getting into Kevin's hot take on the network.
Is that a baseball question? Is that about the game?
I mean, it's about baseball, yeah.
Or did you get here late?
As baseball's hot stove league begins to heat up, speculation builds around Nick Castellanos. Is he more likely to be with the Cubs or White Sox next year, or neither? And which Chicago team needs Castellanos more?
That's an interesting question. When you look at the desperation level, where is it higher, on the north side or the south side? I don't know that the Sox are, you know, in a position where they can
ignore somebody who's that available makes as much sense for them. And that seems to be the rumor. MLBRumors.com projected that the Sox would sign Castellanos, as well as Dallas Keuchel, which I thought was interesting, and keep Jose Abreu. I think probably the Sox need him more, even though that they've identified a need for a left-handed bat. I don't think that you know, whether you're right-handed or left-handed matters if you're as good as Nick Castellanos potentially could be with the White Sox. I mean, he showed in the final couple months with the Cubs what he's capable of. That would be a good ballpark for him. I think there's some defensive concerns that might have been a little bit overblown. I don't think he was as bad defensively as many people feared. And the Cubs, well, yeah, they definitely could use him. They definitely would find a role for him. He definitely loves playing for the Cubs. You wonder how much of that, Zach, and you would know this better than I would, how much of that was Joe Maddon and how much of that was being a Cub. But I think if you're weighing which team needs him more and maybe where he fits best, you know, you could make the argument it's the White Sox.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I think that, and I've struggled with this since the offseason started. You know, Theo Epstein made a big deal when he first became Cubs president, how you don't want to pay guys for past production, right? And it happened. He broke his rule this year. They bring in Craig Kimbrell because they had a major hole at the end of that bullpen, and it kind of bit them in the rear end, didn't it, this season?
Yeah.
And then you look at what Castellanos was able to do on the field after the trade from Detroit, and you cannot play any better than this guy played during the entire second half of the season for the Cubs. Did the Cubs see the best that you'll ever see of Nicholas Castellanos? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but I know that there are other needs that are more important where you have to allocate your resources before you can start thinking about paying Castellanos. And I think because of that, I think the answer to this question, which Chicago team needs Castellanos more, is probably the White Sox, even though there is nothing wrong with the Nicholas Castellanos that the Cubs saw during the second half of last year.
No, I mean, Castellanos is a great player and a great hitter. Specifically, Zach, I agree with you. I think the Cubs and White Sox are very obviously in different positions right now. The Cubs are spending a ton of money. They are still in their window, their win now mode, and they have to try to retool this thing to build up an aging, underperforming rotation, a bullpen that was sketchy at best last season, and an offense which was too inconsistent, too much swing and miss, not enough contact there, and that bit them in the rear end multiple times. So I think that while they can technically afford Castellanos, the Cubs, they need to devote those funds to other areas to kind of patch up holes that they already have now, because they are still trying to win. They're in win now mode, whereas the White Sox probably another year, another 2 years away, maybe. And I think Castellanos is a better fit with the Sox as well, because he's not a great outfielder, and the White Sox have gotten like the worst DH production in the American League over the past 5-6 seasons.
When you say win now mode, you mean like win within the next 2 years, right?
I mean like in 2020 they should be winning the division.
The Cubs?
Yes.
Like, wow.
They should be the favorites in the NL Central next season. There's no reason they shouldn't.
Zach
with the
grimaced,
money that,
Zach grimaced
with,
at that
with
thought.
The money that they
I did
spend,
not grimace.
With the talent that
little,
they have.
Yeah, I don't disagree with Kevin. I mean, you heard Theo Epstein say that the goal next year is to still put together a team that can win a championship. And you look at Milwaukee with some of the issues that they've had in terms of keeping their rotation healthy. I think that's why you're seeing all the changes, starting with the support staff right now with the Cubs before they start getting to the actual roster, is because this team was built to win a championship and underperformed mightily at the tail end of last year.
I'm sorry, I misinterpreted your grimace. Must have just been indigestion.
There's a case to be made that both the Cubs and the White Sox could really benefit from Nicholas Castellanos. The spark he provided for the Cubs on offense was great, and you'd like to see that continue for a team that struggled so much offensively last season. But he'd be great for the White Sox for that reason as well, and you know, fill the need for right field there as well. But I will say, what would be better for Nicholas Castellanos? What is he looking at? I think he might prefer the Cubs for the reason that they are competitive right now. So maybe that's he spent all that time in Detroit. And yeah, it's all about the money.
I mean, he would look good in right field in either ballpark. At this point, I think both teams need him more. But what I'm worried about is I don't know that Jason Hayward – can play center field every day. And I really think he was having a pretty good year. And when they made that move from right to center, his numbers went down. And I don't think that was just because. I think it had something to do with that. So I think it probably makes more sense. Now, if you trade Kyle Schwarber, I don't see why Nick Castellanos couldn't play left field. So that could be an option too. But I don't, I mean, does Nick Castellanos have to play right field? I'm not a baseball geeky enough to know that. Is there a metric that says he can't play left field? Does that exist?
See, I would disagree slightly with your premise, because I believe Jason Hayward's struggles at the plate didn't occur because he was moved to center field. I just think he went south when he was put in the leadoff position for whatever reason. There's certain guys that can handle it. There's certain guys that can't. And Hayward, who was having, for him, a very good season offensively for the Cubs last season until he was put in the leadoff spot, to me, that was a bigger issue. I think Jason Hayward is such a dynamic player out in the field. He can play center or right. That doesn't impact me. And I, when I look at Castellanos, yes, he can play left. He can play right as well. The reason that he was in left, as you mentioned, I mean, that he was in right, was because of Schwarber. But late in games, you saw the Cubs move him to left field when they realigned their defense, when they put Almora in center and moved Hayward back to right.
That's a 5 of 5. That's what we think. What do you think? 312-644-6767. Zach Zaman in for Molly today. Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.